versus Erie Indemnity Company.
Do you want some water?
I've got some here for Evan. Do you want one? He's got water.
I'll just knock it off.
Coffee? Tea?
Donuts.
Dunkin' Donuts.
Something that stains anymore. Yeah.
They're making way for the next crowd to come in.
Well, we'll see if you figured out this microphone, Mr. Hart.
I've watched enough people
Let's try it. Maybe you should bring it down. I think it's, if you put it in front of you, it works better, even though it's a little lower. Maybe not.
So how does this?
That's okay. Thank you. Try it. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Christian Hurt. I'm here this morning, although we're closer to the afternoon, on behalf of Intellectual Adventures. This is an Alice appeal, and the district court erred when it concluded that the patent in this case, the 298 patent, fails the Alice test. So there are a number of issues in this appeal, but the primary question is really, where does this patent fit? Is this case more like Symantec, or is it more like McGrow? And we believe that this case is much closer to McGrow and the same outcome in McGrow, which was reversal of the district court.
What about, can you include fair warning in your analysis of what's close and what's farther? Because
yes,
it seems to me it's McGrow versus fair warning.
Sure. So fair warning, the difference between McGrow and fair warning and where our patent fits in is the rules that were issued in fair warning on fraud detection. It was a computerization of criteria that humans did. So how long has someone looked at a particular medical file for? Who was the person? When was it accessed? And in our case, like McGrow and McGrow, the criteria are tied to the technology. So in McGrow, it was a specific rule associated as an output.
Well, wait, tell us about the criteria here and why they couldn't be done or weren't done by humans before.
Sure. So there's two pieces to the claim. There's the selecting part, and there's three selecting criteria, and then there's the what I call the digital signature process of backing. The three selecting criteria, selecting a file based on whether there's data that exceeds the ending file marker, or whether there's a mismatch between the file name and the contents of the file, or where identically sized files exceed the threshold. There's no evidence in the record that humans actually perform.
But those are kind of objective inquiries, and that, let me suggest it to you so you can tell me why I'm wrong, but that to me suggests that those objective inquiries make it more like fair warning than McGrow, where what was in place previously was really a subjective analysis, and McGrow said, yeah, but now we've computerized it, made it objective. This is something new and different.
And I think that analysis applies here because in the 298 patent background, there is a discussion of before these claims, there was manual review. And an administrator could either go file by file and try to find out is this file an unauthorized file or not. And that review missed the things that our patent catches. So a great example, or a primary example in my mind, is data that's beyond the end of the file marker. If you have an image, if you have a file that says document 1 PDF, and you do a file-by-file review, and you open that file, it looks like a normal PDF because a computer administrator can't see data that's past the end of file marker is not going to show up in the PDF. Or if it's an image file and the administrator opens the image, they'll see the image, but past the end of data file marker, there could be unauthorized file data associated with something besides the image, some illegal pirated software or something of the like. That doesn't show up in that manual review. And so
okay, well, the computer allows you to do things quicker and better and more thoroughly, but haven't our cases said that's not enough?
The cases have said that when what you are taking is a prior art process, a manual process, and just computerizing it. There isn't an analog to, for example, looking for data beyond the end of the data file market. There's no evidence in this record that computer administrators could see that.
Isn't that the same as saying, suppose I assign a clerk project and I say I don't want anything beyond 3 pages, or I give them all my clerks an assignment and I say I don't want anything beyond 3 pages, I don't want any pictures, and I don't want anything addressing policy, and then they hand them to me, one is 4 pages, I just put that over there, one of them has pictures in it, I put that over there, I look at one, it says Congress said, I put that over there, so now I've got, I've sorted them out. That's what your patent does.
And then
I make a report. I got one policy. Then I report it to Judge Prost. That's basically your invention there.
I don't believe so, Judge Ryan. The reason is that for the data past the end of the file marker, there's no way a human can see that. And there's also the second part of the claim that's not just...
Well, of course there is. They look. When they simply go past the code, they can do it. The machine can do it. They can do it.
Well, if a person can't open up the file, it's to my knowledge, and look and see, you know, it's a bunch of zeros and ones. There's no human readable piece, to my knowledge, where a human can say this is the end.
But you're not claiming the process of opening or even of seeing. You're claiming something different.
That's correct, and I was discussing whether a human could perform it. There's also a second part of the claim in the digital signature process, and the specification discusses in column 7 that there's a new use of checksums in this patent. So in the end of file...
Why don't you tell us where we are on column 7?
Sure, it's in column 7, lines 48 through 65. Beginning discussion of figure 2, it states, unlike checksums that they are traditionally used in the computing field, the checksum described herein is not related to the total number of bytes used to generate the number, thus reducing the traditional problem of checksums, namely the similar file lengths are more likely to generate the same checksum than dissimilar file lengths. So let me explain how this impacts the claims. In the end of file example, where I've got an image that goes to a point, I've got some extra data beyond that point. If a checksum is generated on that entire file, it may not match a checksum in the unauthorized file list, because the unauthorized file data is just that last part. Not so if you take a checksum of the whole file, it's not going to match the checksum in the database. But in this new non-traditional use of checksums, it does a rolling basis throughout the file to make sure that it hits that unauthorized data at the end and produces a match, whereas a traditional use of the checksum across the entire file may not have a match because the unauthorized data, in my case, might be appended to an image, but in another case where it was found, may have been appended to a different type of file like a PDF. And so if you include in the checksum the part of the file that is authorized, it won't perform the match. And I think that digital signature process distinguishes this from your honors example in addition to the selection criteria, because in your honors example, Judge Random, you were selecting memos that were non-compliant based on criteria you could see, not based on some attributes of the files as matched up to a list of known unauthorized files. There isn't an analog to performing the generating and comparing characterizing steps in the patent, and Claim 7 shows why those steps are also inventive, especially when combined with those three selection criteria. If the claim mentioned...
Why aren't humans capable of reading binary language?
I think humans can see the zeros and the ones if your computer is able to open them. I believe the issue is knowing where the end of the data file marker is. It's not some red line that's going to show up if you were to try to open it with text pad. And there's no analog to, at least in the record, to humans being able to perform that process. I mean, taking to its extreme, humans could perform data compression and encryption, but those types of patents this court is similar.
But you're not claiming any, Counselor, you're not claiming any of those things. You have a system, you have a computer system that selects from a pile of files, it selects for those, and then it segregates them by aggregate size, content, and a data. Then you have a generator that's generated identification values, then a report. That's what you've invented, the system of doing that. And that system, because we don't know how the file is selected, we don't know how you go about, we don't know the rules for comparing generated information value from one to another. All we're left with is selecting files, looking at them based on content. How is that not abstract?
Sure. So I believe
you mentioned macro. I mean, that's what I'm getting to. There's no rules here.
So in macro, the court concluded the rule of macro was an output as a function of certain inputs. The output was going to be the computer's graphic animation as a function of sequence of sounds and when those sounds happen. That was the detail of the rule of macro. Here, the rule is it provides the three selection criteria, so it's not just selecting a file. And then the how, if there is an issue of how...
But macro had rules that were based on mathematical values and generation of the facial expression and matching that up to the configuration of the lips, the mouth. I mean, it did have rules.
It did. Those were all in the specification of that patent here.
But it claimed them. The claims claimed rules. Where are the rules that are claimed here?
Sure. So the rules are the selection criteria and then the comparing, the generating and comparing characterization stuff. So in McGrow, the claim was...
It doesn't say criteria. It just says selecting a file. Selecting the file by determining. I don't see criteria. I don't see specific rules.
Well, the rules in the selection step are does the file name mismatch the contents of the file? Is there data beyond the end of the data file marker? If there's a plurality of identical size files, do they exceed the threshold? And if the claim lacks enough how to one ordinary skill in the art, the patent also includes 50 pages of source code for each of those limitations. And the Quiz Court recently in visual memory concluded that the Rule 12 stages, where we are at here, that the court must credit that source code would show one ordinary skill in the art how to implement each of those functionalities. And the rules of McGrow say the first set of rules is define an output morph weight set stream. That's for the images, as a function of the phoneme sequence, that's a sequence of sounds, and the timing of the sequences. Our case has an equally detailed, in my opinion, set of rules for how to select a file and determine it's unauthorized. And like McGrow, the prior art manual review had subjective components where an administrator would either search for large files and try to determine if they're unauthorized or not, or manual review files. That process had limitations because it missed the types of files that this claim is able to detect. And for the same reasons, we believe that this claim is eligible for patent protection. I'm in my rebuttal.
Yes, thank you. We'll reserve the remainder and hear from your colleague. Thank you.
May it please here on behalf of Erie. I think, Judge Prost, your...
I want to try to talk into your mic. Thank you.
I think, Judge Prost, you posed to Mr. Hurd the issue of, is this case closer to ICRO or is it closer to fair warning? I would add to that, is it closer to fair warning or even the first appeal in this case, where we had the 434 patent dealt with the database technology specifically limited to particular XML, computer language, not a language that people speak, specifically limited to the use of metadata, something that people can't understand. And this court said, in that case, that doesn't matter because the way you're using it is generic, it's abstract. The limitation to something that only computers can read or only computers can generate does not by itself move this case from one that deals with an abstract concept to one where we're talking about patents.
So what more did McGrow have that's missing here and missing in the earlier case?
Your Honor, I think you already said it, and so I'll just be stating the fact. But I think the key distinction, and one of the most important distinctions in McGrow, is that Judge Reyna's opinion in that case made it very clear that it was very important that the prior art in McGrow, the ways that people were, the ways that computers were used to synchronize audio tracks with the visual 3D animation, involved a subjective step where the computer animator had to make a subjective judgment about where to draw particular lines in order to line up the facial expression with the audio track. And what the invention in McGrow did, what the claims did, using specific rules, was take what was a subjective process and make it an objective process. And that was actually an improvement to the computers, an improvement to the way that computers could operate in order to do 3D animation. Here, we're not talking about taking something that was a subjective process previously and making it an objective process. Remember what the problem that's stated here is. The problem stated here is you are starting from a place where you already know what files there are that are unauthorized. That's necessary to the claim. You're not finding any new files and determining if they have pornography or copyrighted materials in them. You already have a list of all the files that you don't want on your system. What this claim is about is using certain predetermined criteria to run a screen and identify suspicious files that are then going to be looked at more closely in the second half of the claim, as Mr. Hurd described. So you're not moving from an objective, from a subject to an objective process. The process is already objective.
Why isn't that an improvement in computer technology to be able to identify matter that basically comprises malicious code?
Two responses to that, Your Honor. Respectfully, I disagree with the premise that the claim has anything to do with the identification of malicious code. These claims are about identifying pornographic material, copyrighted material that shouldn't be on your system, other illicit files. But it's not about identifying, like, a computer virus, for example, which is what I would think of for malicious code. The reason that it's not improvement to the computer is that...
wouldn't a system that would prevent, say my kid, from getting on and viewing pornographic material on a computer, wouldn't that be an improvement over the use of the technology, especially with respect to my enabling my child to become proficient in that technology?
Your Honor, I think you could hypothesize a claim that created a new technological method for example, recognizing a completely new file that the computer's never seen before has pornography in it or that it should be looked at further. That's not what these claims are about. What these claims talk about is in column 1, line 64, to column 2, line 16 of the patent, some appendix page 33, I'm sorry. The background of the invention, the background of the technology says we know that people who are trying to hide illicit content in digital files do a few different things. One is they'll take a large file and break it up into a number of equally sized smaller files to help the state protection. Another thing they'll do is they'll take the illicit content and stick it at the back end of legitimate content to try and hide it. And the third thing that we know they will do is name the file one thing, for example, .txt, but have a different type of data in the file. And all of the criteria here, all the claims are doing is saying, we know people are doing this, just use those criteria and apply them to identify suspicious files. There's not even in the patent any argument that it's an improvement to the technology or there's any technological insight in the invention. I would like to address, Judge Reyna, the second part of his question, which is, it goes to what Mr. Horvitz argued about perhaps the second half of the claim, this identification of a digital value that you're going to use as a basis for comparison to your list in the checksum. I have 2 points there. One is, I think there's a key acknowledgement at pages 6 to 7 of Intellectual Ventures' reply brief. And that's where they're discussing what happened during the prosecution of the 298 claims. And what happened during prosecution is that there was a Section 102 rejection over a patent to an individual named Farmer. And the way that Intellectual Ventures overcame that rejection and the way that it's described in the reply brief was by adding those predetermined selection criteria. So everything in the second half of the claim in terms of generating the checksum, comparing it to a known list, and then if there's a match, marking the file, that is already acknowledged by IB in the reply brief to then known in the art. The second point is there was some discussion, and I think it was really a new argument that we haven't seen in the briefs to date, that there's something in particular about the checksumming that makes these claims patent eligible. The first point on that is, of course, the independent claims don't require checksums whatsoever. They just require the generation of an identification value. But even if they did require specifically generating a checksum, which is one way to generate an identification value, the patent says that column 9, lines 10 to 12, there are numerous possible algorithms that may be utilized to generate a checksum, with an exemplary algorithm shown in figure 3. And all figure 3 shows is a box that says generate checksum. And at lines 34 to 36 of column 9, it says it should be appreciated that persons have an ordinary skill in the art, that many other types of algorithms could be utilized to achieve results specific to certain types of files. So there's an acknowledgement in the patent itself that checksumming is well known. Now, there is a statement in the specification that Mr. Hurt pointed to today for the first time that says we're going to discuss a way to do checksumming that was not previously done. I don't agree with Mr. Hurt's summary of how that works. What I think the patent's describing is that you generate a checksum for a small part at the front of the file and see if you have a match before you generate a checksum for a larger part of the file. Because if the first 8 bytes or 12 bytes of the file don't match something on the list, then there's no reason to spend the time to checksum the entire file. That is arguably only relevant, to claims 5 and 15. Intellectual Ventures has never argued in any of its briefing in district court or in this court that 5 and 15 should be treated differently from the independent claims. And even if it had, 5 and 15 don't describe anything other than a conventional use of technology, just the generating of 2 checksums instead of 1 checksum.
Mr. Hurt mentioned hundreds of pages of code.
Yes, sir.
I didn't recall there being hundreds of pages of code.
I believe Your Honor, it's 50 pages of code.
Okay. For each one, he said. So that I multiplied that.
I'm sorry.
I multiplied that 50.
Okay. So it's 50 pages of code, I believe. They are in the joint appendix. A couple of points on the source code. One is, of course, can't be that Alice would have come out differently if the patent had issued before the Supreme Court had some generic source code appended to it. That cannot be the differentiator between a patent that claims patent eligible subject matter and a patent that doesn't. Second, Intellectual Ventures has now briefed this issue three times, twice in this court and once in the district court. It has never identified a single line of that code and pointed to it and said, you see, this is where we're doing something that wasn't already known in the art. And third is the district court record pointed out that the claims are not limited to the source code. So the focus is on the claims. I would like to make one point about the claims that I think is important because of the amount of time Mr. Herb focused on the idea of a human not being able to see data that's passed in the data marker. And that is, these claims are written in the disjunctive. Right. If you're using any one of the three predetermined selection criteria, then you're within the scope of the claim. And I don't think there's any argument that even with respect to the end of data marker, humans couldn't do that. There's clearly, as the district court pointed out in footnote 4 of its brief, a non-computerized analog to that. The district court's opinion that there's a non-digital analog to it. But even if we assume that humans cannot look at past the end of the data marker, there's no question that, for example, humans could look at the file size of sequential files that have the exact same size and then make a determination about whether the aggregate size of those files exceeds a predetermined threshold. And that's one of the criteria. There's really no debate that people could do that. I think with the remaining time, Your Honors, I'd like to answer any questions that you have. Otherwise, we would submit that considering Symantec, considering fair warning and Your Honor's prior decision in the prior appeal in this case, this patent claim is not in motion.
Thank you.
Moving the microphone.
I'd like to begin by addressing the point that Erie's counsel made regarding the Crow, where the distinction counsel made was the Crow decision, the process used by the computer animators was a subjective process, and here the process used by prior IT administrators was objective. Specification provides two examples of what prior computer administrators did, and essentially a search for large files and a file-by-file review, both of which require an amount of subjective determination to figure out, is this really an unauthorized file or not? And here, like the present rules that are claimed in the invention, the selected steps, the digital signature process are different than what the prior art computer administrators use. So this isn't the computerization of those processes. It's instead something different. It's particularly file identification application. It's claim 10, whose operations are in each claim. And that's what distinguishes this case from fair warning. There, the criteria of the things that humans did here. There's no evidence in the record at this stage in the case that humans performed the invention claim steps in the same way as the invention. And for that reason, we believe that these claims are offered in protection. Unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you. We thank both sides. The case is submitted. That concludes our proceedings for this morning. Thank you.
All rise.
tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.